There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
You're listening to Drive Live with me, Natalie Lindo-Taylor, and in for Tim Elliott is the lovely Emma Brain. Right now, though, we're turning our attention to cultural intelligence. If you're not sure what that is, you weren't alone. You're not alone, but we're going to find out more now.
Drive Live talks careers.
We have two guests for careers this week. We are joined by Matthew Lewis, who's a partner at Middle East and Africa with Boyden. Matthew, thank you so much for joining us.
Pleasure.
And we also welcome back Rebecca Kelly, who's a partner at Morgan Lewis. Rebecca, good to see you.
Good to see you too.
Good to have you back. So if we can start with this. So we talked about cultural intelligence yesterday, and Tim and I were just sort of throwing the word around. He's like, do you know what emotional intelligence is? Yes. Do you know what IQ is? And we're quite familiar with that. But when it comes to CQ or cultural intelligence, Matthew, why do we need to, first of all, tell us what it is. And then I want you to let us know why we need to be a bit more aware of it.
No problem. Well, it's an evolution of IQ and EQ. So if the way to look at it is 30 years ago, we only used to measure IQ. Then we started measuring emotional intelligence, which is EQ, and cultural intelligence or cultural quotient, CQ, has become more of a measure now of management and leadership. So in business terms, it can be understood as the capability to relate to others at work, which sounds simple, but obviously in a multicultural context. So that's why it's particularly relevant in the UAE. And I suppose as we're in Ramadan, it's a great time to be talking about it.
And when you say cultural, are we talking just about cultural in terms of people being different? You look around this room, Zena's from the Philippines, I grew up in England, we're all here together, learning on our feet, working together as a team. Is it a lot about that, or can it be cultures in terms of, I don't know, a business culture compared to a different type of career, maybe a teaching environment?
Yeah, I mean, we're really talking about individual background culture, mainly because it's so diverse here. What we've found over the last 10 or 12 years in the region is that people get hired very much on their technical ability to work in the region, but without a lot of appreciation for their ability to adapt to the environment. And where that shows up is in leadership behavior. So very often people get hired because they can do the job, but they fail on their ability to adapt or navigate the actual cultural environment that exists. And that's where you see the issues and the mistakes.
Because I was going to say, it's often very difficult. You know, we come from one place where we really only interact with people from a very similar background. So it can be, as we say, the culture shock when people come and go, oh, I have no idea anything about where these other people are from. How do I deal with that? How do I respond to their needs and, you know, be mindful of their backgrounds?
Yeah, and that's the problem. And there's probably four elements to cultural intelligence to think about. There's what we call CQ drive, which is that sort of passion and that interest and that confidence to go and ask those questions. This knowledge, which is the knowledge that you actively go and seek to build up about other people's cultures. There's then having a strategy, so a self-awareness and an ability to find examples and ways of working that are going to work for different people. And then it's taking action, and that's a combination of verbal and non-verbal. So we know in this region, on action alone, that certain behaviors, the way you sit, you know, maybe offend certain cultures. But if you're unaware, you don't know. I mean, I remember a very early example coming here in 2006. I was sat with an Emirati client and a colleague who'd been here 15 years, and I crossed my legs and my foot was bouncing up and down. And we walked out of the meeting and I said, oh, that went really well. And he said, no, it was a disaster just because of your foot was going up and down in the meeting. Yeah. You know, but that's how you learn. You learn the hard way.
And, I mean, Rebecca, in the context of law, would you say it's a field where there's a lot of cultural intelligence, or is it something that because you're dealing one-to-one with maybe a client, you don't get that experience?
I think you wouldn't be able to do, you wouldn't be able to practice law in this jurisdiction without being able to adapt to the different cultures. Mm. We have a range of different cultures within the firm, but then we also have a range of different cultures when it comes to our clients. And particularly in the area that I practice in with disputes and resolving disputes, you know, your ability to read the other culture and understanding what and adapt what whatever strategy you have in order to seek a resolution is really critical. And you can't apply the rules that you've just learned or the rules from the law book, let's say. You have to be able to adapt. And I think that that underpins what cultural intelligence actually is your ability to adapt to a situation, being able to read and interpret somebody else's desires and what it is that they've come to the table with. And I think that in this jurisdiction, certainly the lawyers and the issues that you face day to day, you are constantly dealing with different cultures.
I mean, it's key, isn't it? Understanding people is essentially the bottom line. If you don't understand someone, it's very difficult to find out what they want and how you can resolve it. So now we know what CQ is, what cultural intelligence is. Next, we're going to look at how do you get it. Sounds great. So we all need to make sure we're on top of it. Don't forget, if you have a question for either of our guests, if it's of a legal nature, Rebecca's happy to look at that. If it's all about jobs, work or CQ specifically, definitely will challenge Matthew with that too. 4001 via the free messaging app or call us 423 1010.
Drive Live talks careers.
We are talking careers. No Tim Elliott today, so Emma Brain is alongside me. We have two guests in the studio with us today. Matthew Lewis, who is a partner at Middle East and Africa at Boyden, and Rebecca Kelly, who's a partner at Morgan and Lewis. We've been talking about CQ. If you're new to CQ, it's all about cultural intelligence. So we've established it's something that we need, particularly in this region. It's quite useful. And Rebecca, you're obviously a lawyer. We wanted to bring up a text that we had in last week because we're talking about cultural intelligence, and this seems a striking example of where maybe someone's not quite got the right chord. We had a text in last week. I think it was Haider that texted in. Basically, he said that my employer's asked me to shave, and he worked for a financial consultant. So he wasn't working with food preparation. There was nothing like that. But they were told you have to be presentable. And he said, well, I am presentable. It's neatly trimmed or whatever. And he said, basically, they were told the policy could lead to dismissal. But what the company have said is they're fining people on a daily basis who breach their rules. So, I mean, is that a legal issue or is that a lack of CQ? Now we all know what that means.
I think it's two things. As far as a legal issue is concerned, the labour law does allow and permit an employer to fine employees when they specifically breach health and safety rules and regulations. So I'm at a loss to see how growing a beard, unless you're serving food or in any F&B sort of role, would actually be a breach of those health and safety regulations. So it is entirely possible that a company can fine an employee for outward breaches of health and safety rules. What we have in respect of a policy, if an employee goes into a company and is aware of a policy that requires their male staff to be clean shaven and then goes and then acts contrary to that policy, then I do think it's up to the employer to correct that individual. But it is about what goes on prior to their start. Now, if it's unreasonable, then that's a different conversation, because I think what this particular individual needs to be aware of is why that the policy is actually in place. And I know that I say this quite a lot on this show, but communication is key. You know, we need to understand why they have actually put that policy in place. Is it because people were not actually presenting themselves to work in a presentable state? So that they then said, okay, we're not allowing any beards at all. I mean, it seems to me to be an unreasonable policy to have, but there may be a reason for it. So I would suggest that the listener actually communicates directly with the supervisor to find out what exactly it is and why that policy has been put into place.
Matthew, it does sound quite a case of, you know, a lack of cultural sensitivity and intelligence. But, you know, we've established that CQ is a desirable trait. Obviously, if you're looking for candidates in your workplace, you want them to fit in. Yeah. You want them to be able to be part of a team. So is it something that you're born with? Is it like the very famous makeup brand? Are you born with it? Or is it something that you develop and learn over time?
I think it's probably something anyone can develop, and there isn't an nth degree. I mean, the reality is you're born with an element of intelligence and you build on that through schooling. You're born with an element of emotional intelligence and you build on that through human interaction. Cultural intelligence probably is one of the greatest gifts I think we can give to employees or give to our children. And this region is perfect for that. It's one of the things that we all get and maybe take for granted because of exposure that you wouldn't get maybe in your home country because of the narrow nature of where you're coming from. I mean, it's something you can learn through a relatively simple process. Simply, the first one is to seek to understand. You know, try and understand the other party, the individual, the employee, or your, even your boss, and where they're coming from. You know, what was their upbringing, what was their cultural background, what was their religious background. And that's about asking questions and talking to each other. Secondly, it's about listening, not only about what was said, but what's not said. So very often in this region, things are said, but then they're implied, but not said. So being able to get behind why that is, because obviously in for example, in this region, you know, saying please and thank you are not as common. It's just cultural. Mm. But it doesn't mean it's rude. But yeah. Ultimately, you need to understand that it's not rude. When you're trying to build a relationship with anyone, that's where cultural intelligence can really make a difference, because it's about finding common ground. Ramadan is a great time to ask questions in the middle of a cultural holiday as to what's important to you, what's not important. I sat with an individual last week. We were interviewing for a job. She was a senior marketing director. She was from Russia. And we were halfway through the conversation. I said, I'm really sorry, I didn't offer you a coffee. And she said, don't worry, I'm Muslim. I said, wow, I never would have guessed you were Muslim coming from Russia. And she said, no, I come from a very small area, an hour east of Moscow. It's all Muslim, but we only fast in the last 10 days.
It's interesting you should say that, because we were just talking to someone who's Russian upstairs, and they are going over the World Cup. Very exciting. Mm. And they were talking about little known facts about Russia. 30% Muslim, I think it was.
Right, in the middle.
So, yeah.
And you don't assume this. So the problem is we all assume. So we make assumptions. We have cognitive bias about certain people, and it's best to leave those at the door. And finally, it's about respecting those differences and embracing them. And again, Ramadan is a great time to do that. So I think you can build on cultural intelligence. I've been here 12 years, and I'm still learning all the time about different cultures. So there isn't a right and wrong, but ultimately it's about being open-minded and asking questions.
I mean, I think we're very privileged here in the UAE. We have something like 220 nationalities. That's a whole lot of cultural learning, isn't it? But as we were talking a little bit earlier as well, just little things can, like, you go to shake someone's hand and they're not going to shake your hand. It's the little things you learn and pick up very, very quickly. So it's a great opportunity to learn from so many different people in such a short space of time. Mm.
And if we think about what happens when an employee joins an organisation, you know, that's what they're faced with. Mm. And it's not because they're looking at a sea of different faces and that everybody doesn't look like them. It's because they're walking into an organisation where they're not familiar with the culture. So, you know, making sure that companies have training policies, integration policies, making sure that individuals feel as though they're able to adapt, because it all comes back down to their ability to adapt. And a company needs to also adapt to having different cultures when we talk about different nationalities, but also different approaches to issues. So I think it plays out both in, you know, our day-to-day lives, but also in our companies as well.
And Matthew, how would you approach sort of helping someone who is maybe low on the low CQ, the low cultural intelligence side? Because by this token of it being understanding, you don't want to offend someone and say you don't understand people.
No, and it's all subjective. So, you know, they may not be demonstrating those behaviours now, even though they have the knowledge. I mean, the first thing is they've got to have intent. It's like any behavioural change. It's about awareness. So it's raising that as a topic and saying, are you aware that this person may be slightly offended by the way you're dressing? Mm. And addressing that and saying, no one's right or wrong. We're just highlighting it to you. And then to a degree, it's coaching and mentoring in terms of managers and leaders helping their people understand each other, being the referee or the negotiator between two parties. So, you know, the way we like to look at CQ is that IQ might get you hired, might get you in the door. EQ will determine maybe how far you go. And CQ will determine whether anyone comes with you.
Yeah.
Right? So if they're not with you, they're not going to come, because they'll just see you as a lone wolf.
I mean, I take that. You mentioned something that's very easy for most of us to understand. Maybe the way you dress, maybe where you come from, turning up to work involves looking like X, Y or Z. You come here. And I was lucky before I started working here. I'd visited. So I had a sense of what the UAE was like before I moved to Dubai full time. But I definitely felt like I did think initially about my wardrobe a bit more. Yeah. But how do you have that conversation, Rebecca, without someone turning around as a boss, you know, potentially, how do you mention to a member of staff that perhaps what they're wearing isn't quite appropriate and isn't quite culturally okay?
In my career here, I have had to have those conversations, and I've also had to advise clients on how they can have those conversations. And I guess from a cultural perspective, being Australian, I'm gifted because I am very direct. And I think that that's sometimes the only way to handle those difficult conversations, because whilst I can skate around the issue, you will walk away thinking that I'm not really that upset with what you're wearing. Mm. And it's not usually about how I perceive you, but it's also about how clients may perceive you or what's going on in the organisation that they've raised this. We have that with clients where they mobilise a team from another country and they'll bring them over here, and there may be 20 people that are coming over for a particular project, and it may be a year-long project. They haven't looked at the UAE as being somewhere that they wanted to live, so now they're here. And so what my advice always is to get some cultural training. And that cultural training allows them not to be surprised when they hear that certain things are in breach of the law, or that their contracts don't allow them to do A, B and C, something that they were used to doing back in their home jurisdiction. And I think that information is really important. No one should be hiding the fact that in this country and in other countries around the GCC, there are different standards to be applied, I think, when you are dressing for work or when you are meeting other people from different cultures.
It's fascinating, because it is something I would dread to have that conversation with someone. I'm not anyone's boss, but having to sort of say, this is too low, or this is too short, or you're not smart enough, or maybe you're too smart. You know, there's some roles where you might have to have that conversation, where we're in a startup, we're not all coming in a suit, but it's so sensitive conversations.
But if you think about, if anyone's been here for any length of time, if you went to the Mall of the Emirates 3 years ago, you didn't see those signs at the front of the door at the front of the mall that said, yeah, this is appropriate, this is not appropriate. And I think that that's the message, isn't it? You have to be direct, you have to give examples. And there's no point, what you don't want to do is create a situation where somebody feels as though they're being victimised in their office or in their work environment because of the way that they choose to dress, but because of their particular manner. So I think that what you need to do is give examples, make sure that it's feedback that is what I would always encourage people to do as well is give feedback where there's more than one person in the room, not to embarrass somebody, but to make sure that the person that's receiving the feedback is not given, doesn't walk away from that meeting hearing something different. Mm.
Yeah.
So I think being direct, there is a lot to be said for being able to be direct and actually being able to say to somebody, look, this isn't actually the standards that we would expect in this organisation. This is the standard that we would expect.
You're listening to Drive Live with me, Natalie Lindo-Taylor, and in place of Tim, Emma Brain is here. We're joined in the studio for Drive Live Talks Careers by Matthew Lewis, who's a partner Middle East and Africa at Boyden, and Rebecca Kelly, who's a partner at Morgan Lewis. And we've been talking about CQ, or cultural intelligence, the ability to understand diversity, different people, and work effectively with those people. Now, Rebecca, we have a question, a couple of questions for you. Interested to get your thoughts on this. First of all, which labour law clause, this person asks, clearly states that the employer pays for visa costs? Because you see lots of jobs advertised and they say, oh, employee must cover their visa. And generally, the onus is on the employer.
Yeah, the employer must cover the cost of the visa. The only time that that would be different, there's no example. There's a federal law. It's not in the labour law. It's Federal Law 6 of 1973, which actually sets out the requirements of how you bring in expatriate workers. And that actually says quite clearly that you need to, the employer bears all the onus on making sure that the visa costs and the recruitment costs, actually.
Yeah.
So this is where I know that there's been some pushback from recruitment. I'm not talking about recruitment of C-suite. I'm talking about recruitment companies that are bringing in labourers for construction sites. In certain circumstances, they were forcing the labourers to then pay for their recruitment, and that's illegal.
Okay, we've had another question, and I want to hear from both of you on this. I'll start with you, Rebecca, though. This person texts in, no name on this, understandably. I've been repeatedly told by my manager that the reason I don't get promoted is that I don't dress well. Now, he wants to replace me with someone less qualified, but at least well-dressed. Firstly, what are my legal options? This person then says, I'm doing a great job and hitting my targets. So they're in a target-based role, but passed over for promotion. Their boss is saying, I'm bringing someone new in that dresses better than you. Where do they stand legally, Rebecca?
Well, legally, they would have to look at their contract and work out whether or not there was an obligation in there for them to have a particular standard of dress. And if they're in breach of that particular standard of dress, which is not a requirement under the labour law, but it may be something that's placed in their contract. It may be that this person has a forward-facing role with clients, or there may be something that is missing in respect of what they're how they're presenting themselves at work. So if the listener is unable to correct that and is still meeting their targets, it still may be that they are going to be passed over for promotion unless they do something about that. Their legal avenues for redress would just be based on the fact that they were perhaps discriminated against and whether or not they had a legal claim on that grounds. There isn't a concept here under our law of constructive dismissal, which in other jurisdictions would allow somebody to say that actually because of your conduct, employer, you've put me in a position where I can no longer continue in this role. If the individual felt so aggrieved, then, you know, it would have to actually be up to them to make a complaint at the ministry that they were aggrieved in their role. But I doubt very much whether or not the ministry would necessarily force the employer to maintain the employment contract unless there was something just so devastatingly wrong with the way in which they were dressing.
And what would you add to that, Matthew?
I think it's back to this point about seeking to understand. Ultimately, that individual needs to sit down with their boss and say, what is it particularly about my dress that you don't like, and is that something I'm prepared to address? And if you are, that shouldn't be a performance. It seems clearly not to be a performance issue. So if it's not a performance issue, it's just cognitive bias against that person's dress sense. I mean, I've had thousands of interviews when I'm sat in front of someone and they look great and then they've got white socks or a Mickey Mouse tie, and you know that's not going to wash with a client. But ultimately, you can highlight that, and that's not going to offend anyone to say, listen, I think you should be more conservative or more informal when you go and meet this company. But I think that's almost some form of discrimination, and I wonder then whether it's actually masking some other issue or some other performance issue. Yeah.
Interesting. We've had a text in, no name on this one as well. I think it's important we all don't lose who we are in an attempt to adapt and fit in. We are all individuals, not some homogenous blob.
Yeah.
It's fair enough.
You know, as we were talking earlier about, we're not bound by the same discrimination laws that do exist in other parts of the world, which in some respects have gone maybe too far. Mm. And ultimately, we do live and work in a harmonious environment where all these cultures work together. And I think that's a major plus. I think what we'll realise is that when we all go and work somewhere else, that untold skill that we would have learnt through living and working in the UAE would set us up well for working anywhere. We always say if you can manage and lead here, you can do it anywhere in the world. Everywhere else would be a walk in the park if you can navigate this environment.
I think it's great. We can pat ourselves on the back for living here and developing our CQ, our cultural intelligence. Thank you to our guests today. We're out of time. That was Matthew Lewis, who you just heard, partner at Middle East and Africa at Boyd. And Matthew, thanks so much for coming on. And Rebecca Kelly, who's a partner at Morgan and Lewis. Rebecca, really good to see you. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.